Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Alien vs. Predator Galaxy podcast, the original Alien and Predator podcast. This regular host, Aaron Percival, a.k.a. Corporal Hicks, and joining me are usual partners in crime.
Adam Zeller, a.k.a. Ridgetop.
Eric Adams, a.k.a. Xenomorphing.
And we are also joined today by a special guest, a specialist, I suppose, in the topic that we're going to be talking about today. It is one of my favorite human beings in this world. The person responsible for two of the best pieces of alien lore or novels, regardless, Alex White. Thank you for joining us, Alex.
Hey, it's great to be here again. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome, and thank you for coming on for this one. It's been a little while since Charybdis, so it's been a little while since you were joined me for a chat. We are trying to do more discussion-y kind of things rather than doing... we're a very reactionary sort of podcast. You know, we talk about the books and the comics and the happenings at the time. But yeah, we're trying to branch out, do a bit more discussion. And this is one I didn't want to do this. I'm not going to lie. I hate this topic.
It was your idea.
It was kind of because me and Adam occasionally argue about this, or perhaps not so much argue, but Adam knows how much this winds me up. And I brought it up, and Adam went, you know what? I want to see you get pissed off. Let's do this.
Is that how this worked? That was literally the conversation.
It pretty much went down that road of Adam just wanted to see me get wound up on a podcast.
I kind of want to see it too, actually. So I'm going to try and be annoying, and I'm not going to say what I really think. I'm going to say the things that I think get you.
No, don't be like that. You were invited on here to give us an insider's point of view on this.
That's true. I'm supposed to be Team Aaron, not Team Adam.
I mean, it's not so much Team Aaron as Team Factual, Team Straightforward with it. So if you were to disagree with me, that is very much welcome. I kind of know Alex agrees with me, so, you know.
This is going to be interesting. This is going to be really interesting.
Well, in all fairness, I don't really know these guys' opinion, Adam and Eric's.
Have you introduced the topic, or are we still just teasing the topic?
Well, let's be honest. Anybody watching it has seen the title of the episode on the podcast catcher or the website or whatever. But yes, we are discussing canon today. And why it matters to you, to the listener, why it matters to us or doesn't matter to us. Like I said, I don't really know what Adam thinks. I just know he wants me to be pissed off while we're talking. I don't really know how Eric feels about the topic, although I have a minor inclination of Eric's opinion, I'll be honest. So, canon. Mm-hmm. Before we start digging into our thoughts on it, our opinions on it, I'm going to pass it off to Alex to define canon. What is canon?
So I think sort of generally speaking, canon is what is accepted to be true about the series that we're talking about or the fictional property that we're talking about. Now, I have an industrial definition of canon that differs from that. My definition of canon is what are the things that the studio will cause problems for me if I violate, right? Almost everything else. And there's sort of the, what do I think the fans want to be standard? But outside of that, I don't really care. You know, like when a director makes an alien film, that trumps every other piece of canon. So if you wrote a book, the studio is now like, doesn't matter. Your book doesn't matter. No matter what they based it on. You know, I have in different jobs been told like, hey, for example, the Dark Horse Extended Universe, that's non-canonical. Which, again, don't at me. The people who said that are not necessarily in the authority positions, but it is to say that it varies pretty widely. And especially if you're working on development of a coordinated fictional property, you do have to draw a line of demarcation and say like, well, this is what is acceptable as canon and this is not. But I will say that at least heretofore at the top levels, I haven't seen like the same level of coordination as you see like Star Wars, where there's like a Dave Filoni. You know, like I think that there are people who are very hardworking members of the Alien franchise, and I don't want to minimize what my friends at the studio have done here. But I will say that it's a little bit loosey-goosey in Alien, what is and isn't canon, depending on who you're talking to and when you're talking to them and what you're talking about.
So let's just jump straight into this point of view from your side then. So obviously you have written alien fiction. You were not handed the Bible.
No. Well, okay. I was offered a chance to have a one-way link that I could log in to look at a Bible occasionally, but never download it. And it was a long authorization process. And I just didn't end up doing it because I thought, this seems like a liability at best. I think that it's possible to have gotten access to it more permanently if I'd have started, you know, banging an alarm or something. But generally speaking, the way that I tried to write was don't violate the canon of Alien and Aliens. Since I was writing about characters who were nowhere close to Alien 3, I didn't have to worry about people's opinions of that. And then, you know, the only sort of wrinkles in it were when I saw Prometheus and they introduced the black goo, that sort of changed my, well, I don't know what they're doing. And that's not what they were doing, wasn't in the Bible. I had to just guess.
I'm already wound up, Alex. I'm not going to lie.
What's got you so angry?
Just the idea that they have, studios have, Fox has had this guide, this Bible, and they make it hard work for you.
Okay. Now
to get access to it.
You've taken my words and you've made me sound like I'm complaining about the studio here.
I'm not like being wound up from your point of view.
He said it was hard. He could log into it. He just chose not to.
I will say that these kinds of documents are oftentimes pretty carefully guarded because they're associated with a film. And when that happens, when there's an ongoing film development, it's like a classified project. They get real, like, nobody touched this kind of, it's hard to blame them. You know, when you're talking about millions and millions of dollars that could be spoiled by somebody letting something slip on a show just like this one, you know, and when I say spoiled, what I mean to say is there's a lot of marketing dollars that goes into the careful release of information and entertainment. And when that cycle gets broken, that money gets wasted, you know, but really canon, in a lot of ways, canon from the studio's perspective is brand management.
Uh-huh.
And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to determine what is the essence of Alien, not what's true, but rather, like, if Fede Alvarez wants to change everything for Romulus, other directors have had the ability to do that. I mean, look at Resurrection. You know, it's very far from the other films. And so for me, one of the reasons why I don't deal with it very much is because the amount of canon that I need is already abundant in the first two films. I mean, I can write just about anything with what's there. And of course, having to go back and saying, well, what is this black goo thing and how are they going to handle that? That was a bit wild. I definitely wasn't expecting the David as Linnaeus kind of situation there. And that was pretty strange. But I will say this, when I saw the black goo and when I saw, you know, the very first, not the cardinal, what do they call it? The pontiff?
The deacon.
The deacon, there it is. I was like, he's got a religious name.
The cardinal.
Couldn't remember.
The bishop.
You're right. I was just going to go down all the clergy before I got one.
In fairness, we do have a bishop in Aliens, but yeah.
Yeah, see. So it wasn't so bad. But I mean, when I first saw that, I was like, okay, I see now. You're saying it's not an alien movie, but you're saying it is an alien movie in all the right ways. So I'm going to assume that you're trying to change the lore here. And that was when I went back and I watched Alien and I was like, there's never a larva depicted in any of this stuff. And they don't explicitly say that it's injecting a larva. And characters don't feel it like wriggling around until it's too late. And so I started to think, well, I think the black goo is constructing chestbursters out of the organic material that's there. And Covenant just like sealed it. When Covenant came out, I was like, aha, I guessed it. I was in the middle of writing Cold Forge.
And you hadn't been, if I remember rightly, you hadn't been allowed to do the black goo stuff until Covenant came out.
They were saying, yeah, if you try and incorporate too much black goo stuff, then Prometheus and Alien are two separate licenses, is the illusion that they were maintaining back then, even with their vendors.
Which complicates an overarching canon, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, Alien, Predator, Alien versus Predator, and Prometheus were four different licenses.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, if you wanted a Predator and Alien in the same book, that's license number three, which again was really weird because all the different licensors are expected to manage their own canon. And to some extent, I mean, they're the ones who are really determining what gets out there. The studio, you know, they read the book and they give feedback, but if it's really terrible, for example, they're not really in a position other than to reject it outright. And if they're not going to do that, if it's like a C-, they're not going to do anything. They're just going to say, well, please fix these canonical issues and thank you.
Enjoy your bad reviews.
Right.
Can I just ask, because I'm really curious, you're talking about the different licensing. I'm just out of curiosity, as an author, if you'd have said, what is the stance when it comes to like a small cameo or a name drop? Could you have like a Predator cameo just hinted at without the licensing coming into it? Or would they say, no, this is a licensing, even if it's just an offhand reference?
I think that's really dangerous. I think it would get in because no one would see it.
Right.
I think it has been done, Aaron, has it not? In some of the anthologies?
No.
I thought in the second Predator anthology, they had mentioned aliens in one story or another.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I think they refer to some insectoid kind of... I think it's Peter Briggs's short that does it.
Hmm.
So yeah, I suppose it has happened from the Predator side of things, at least alluding to the aliens.
Nothing full on, just, yeah.
The big thing that you want to make sure that you don't do is you don't do something that causes the licensor, 20th Century, to say, you didn't pay for Alien versus Predator, you paid for Predator. That will get you in some real, real deep trouble. And as an author, it's a pretty rude thing to do, considering that you're basically just throwing a grenade at the publisher and walking away. Now, they might not ever want to work with you again either after they get in trouble because you decided you wanted to cross the streams. I would sooner put like a friend's name in a book than try and sneak in a reference from a license we didn't pay for. Now, that gets really interesting with Blade Runner, for example, because a lot of people like to write canonically like Blade Runner and Alien are the same universe, which, I mean, you're allowed to try that. You just remember that if you start making direct references, you're going to get in some trouble. See, there's a comment up there, but I don't know when we do those.
Well, I suppose it's relatively relevant. Well, when I say relatively, it is fucking relevant. This will be madness. As all our discussion episodes are, we are broadcasting this live for our Patreon supporters. And one such supporter, Rob Harvey, is asking, Alex, do you think Alien... So you've mentioned this kind of earlier anyway, but do you think Alien would benefit from having a full team in charge of a series narrative like Star Wars does? Or might that restrict the storytelling?
Okay, it will restrict the storytelling. That's what that team's job is. You don't come up to a crowd like authors and say, like, do you have any story ideas or do I need to give you one? They always have a story idea. It's sort of their job. And so the only thing that a team like that does is restrict the storytelling. Now, I'm not saying that that's a good or a bad thing. It really depends on who you are. If you're a fan, it might be a good thing. Certainly, Alien has had a wide spectrum of entries into it. You know, and if you start bringing in the extended universe, I'm supposed to put, you know, Alien 1 beside Mondo and resolve their canon, you know, like that's wild. But at the same time, that's one of the things I think makes Alien really fun is that there is a lack of restriction on the storytelling. And it's a bit like free climbing in that nobody has your back. If you have a terrible idea, they're going to let you make that movie. You know, and I can also say that like teams like that represent studio interference. Now, some teams are better than others. Again, I think there's a lot of goodwill toward Dave Filoni for a good reason. And I think that when you look at making the prequels awesome in retrospect and things like that, you know, like some real miracles have been worked by the storytelling team at Disney for Star Wars. But for Alien, I think that there are a couple of issues. One, the Alien property doesn't financially support a team like that. I love this one. I like this property way more than Star Wars. It's way more realistic to me to think that your boss would shove you into a meat grinder in space for $5 as opposed to you and six friends get in a plane and punch out the Emperor, right? Like there's a big difference in the story that you're telling there. And I think that it's, to me, more exciting to tell that more realistic story. But at the same time, there just aren't as many of us. It doesn't sell as well. It's not the sprawling media empire. And unfortunately, that's what it takes to sustain that kind of a team. And once again, ask David Fincher how he feels about constant studio interference.
I think it is worth mentioning, though, that even though Fox didn't have like a story group to the extent that Disney does, you know, they have had... When would it have happened? When was the Shadow trilogy starting to be a thing, Adam?
Out of the Shadows?
Yeah.
That was 2016, 2015?
Oh, that was earlier than that. Yeah. I mean, they have had... I was just looking through my emails to Terz to see what his job title was on his signature, but I can't see it. But, you know, they did have brand manager, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Sure.
It was 2014.
So at least from when Titan started publishing Alien and novels, they did at least have somebody.
Oh yeah,
you know, who was acting as a light David Filoni, I guess. Because we had Steve Turslin and who was before Steve? Who's been dropping all the bomb? Josh. Josh is a. We had at least those guys at least managing it on some level in terms of a canon, a story group, a Bible.
Sure. And, you know, again, I don't want to take away from those efforts, but the level of validation and interference that I experienced was nowhere near what it would have been for a Star Wars.
How did it compare to Star Trek?
In both cases, very, very easy for me, because I like to write as about as standard as I can get with Alien. I think the biggest distinction would be Marsalis's journey in into Charybdis. I mean, that's the most non-canonical thing that I think I've written. But in all three books, I got no substantial notes from the studio. Nothing that was like, this is breaking. You know, when Disney took over on Into Charybdis, because they took over midway through, like I signed the contract with Fox and then went on to Disney after that in the middle of production. And I turned in the book and they said, okay, everything here is great. You can't kill a kid. And I was like, you cut open a kid in Alien 3 in a long series of shots after drowning her. In a long series of shots. Do you know what you bought?
This isn't a family-friendly property.
Right. I understand. You know, and the thing is like, and I was like, listen, this book is about how war hurts civilians first and predominantly. And kids are civilians that I want to address. I want it to be clear that where there are families, there are children. And where there are children in these kinds of situations, there's tragedy. Now, I'm not going to do it gratuitously, and I made sure that it wasn't like all gory on the page and stuff. You know, I'm going to cut it off mid-sentence. But at the same time, when Disney was like, you can't kill a kid, and I'm like, you can't tell me that there aren't kids here. And it was good. My editor went to bat on it, and I think that Nicole was really on our side. Nicole from the Disney side was on our side. And so it sort of, you know, it got auto-moused, and we sort of said, well, think about this context differently. You're talking about a different property. This is not Star Wars. Uh-huh. You know, where you kill like 13 kids with a lightsaber.
Yeah, I mean, that's even fair. And it's an endless source of brilliant memes. Let's be honest.
In fairness, kids, of course, they get everywhere like sand. I mean, some people think Anakin was justified.
As a parent, no comment.
I think you've already just completely derailed everything I would have said about this, actually.
Oh, no. Well, I mean...
For me, I always... and Sill on the boards accused me of being far too pragmatic when it comes to it. Canon is to me that truth, as you mentioned earlier, but it is that defined truth. So I know full well, you know full well, they have this Bible. They have this timeline of everything that has happened. And at a certain point, again, when Titan started doing the relaunch, when Dark Horse started publishing again, that was a bit of a soft reboot, a bit of a soft slate clean. And from my understanding, you know, it was at that point, everything was then canon. Everything happened. It was true. These were all the events, the EU, the expanded universe, you know, all these events happened in this expanded universe. Mm-hmm. And that was the canon. But you make it sound so loosey-goosey to the point where it was like...
This is what I've been saying for ages whenever we discuss this.
I mean, at the end of the day, the comment that got me called pragmatic was because as a fan... What is or is not considered canon is irrelevant to me because I'm not the one that has to fit into it. You know, I'm not the one writing a book or a comic or a game that has these events that took place that I can't contradict, or, you know, this character that's said and done this, I can't contradict that. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't factor into my enjoyment, but that doesn't sound like it's that strict when it came to your experience. So it's like, what?
Well, okay, so... The extended universe contains so much information in it. Let's take Star Trek, for example. When they said, you know, oh, we want you to write a Star Trek book, I was like, the amount of canon in the Star Trek series, the television series, is massive. The amount in 950 plus novels is ridiculous. That's forgetting about the animated TV show, the comic books, all that other stuff. And then when you look at it, I mean, Dark Horse was having to pump out a lot of content, and some of that may have been certainly in the early 90s after Alien 3, you know, came out, there wasn't a huge renewed interest, as far as I could tell, in the comics. And I think that editorial controls went down. Like, I think that that idea that you should have this super strict story went out the window. And I think that there are a lot of contradictions. You know, and the other thing is that Dark Horse authors were trying to delve new sources for the Xenomorph all the time, right? When you look at the movie series, it feels very traceable and tight. You know, if you were to say, well, these things basically came from LV-426 and we can trace chain of custody through the first three movies. Whereas, you know, the Dark Horse authors were constantly having to come back in there and be like, well, they could have gotten eggs from here, or maybe they spread out, or maybe those space jockeys took them somewhere. I mean, like, the space jockeys walked around and were like friendly forces in the end of, I guess it was Labyrinth, or was it Earth War?
Well, there was a little bit more to the space jockey stuff in there.
Yeah, I think they were friendly. They were...
Well, they appeared friendly in book one, but then it turned out they were just trying to use the aliens to cleanse Earth, and then we're going to rock up and take over the planet once they killed everybody.
And even then, it wasn't clear. It was just, let's have them be a force for evil after all sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the thing is, basically, the Dark Horse people were able to go through and pull the trigger on every Chekhov's gun that was left on the stage. And that doesn't leave a lot of room for these directors to come in. You know, and if you talk to Ridley Scott and you say, like, hey, are you going to read all the novels before you write your next movie? No, he is not. And he doesn't want to hear about them at all. He is Alien. I mean, I don't know if it's from his perspective he feels that way. Maybe he's a little more humble about it, but I've never gotten the impression that he gave a shit what the rest of us wrote.
Well, he didn't give a shit what EVP did. I mean, the other movies.
Right. Exactly. He's not trying to keep canon with the movies. He's definitely not going to try and keep canon with the books. And I don't blame him. You know, again, when they were like, we write the Star Trek book, it was like, well, yeah. I mean, like, I'm just going to go rewatch some of these Deep Space Nine episodes. I'm not going to go back and double check and make sure that everything doesn't conflict with the other writers. Because here's the other thing. A tie-in writer is somebody who is trying to fulfill a contract that is half the money and half the time of a traditional publishing contract. They view it as, you should be grateful to get to work on the franchise because now you'll be associated with it. And so a lot of these people are making decisions as quickly as they can, and they're just trying to make it work for them. And that means that there are a lot of things that get in there that I don't agree with, you know? Like, I don't think that there should be Xenomorph kryptonite. Labyrinth introduced Fitter, the concept that if I dosed myself up on steroids and was super confident, the aliens would telepathically know that they weren't supposed to attack me. And it's like, well, you just nailed down a ton of details. And I really liked them all. They were really cool. But now I can just expect my characters to get all roided up before they go into any nest and no aliens will bother them. And, you know, it's sort of like, how is anybody scared of Venom anymore? Do they not have subwoofers available? You know, and so when you introduce into canon how the scientific processes work, or how, you know, you start nailing this stuff down, the more you nail it down, the more people can extrapolate ways to defeat the undefeatable space evil that is supposed to scare the shit out of you every single time. That's one of the things that really you have to be really careful with when you start writing like the science of it and things like that, because there are so many implications of everything that you say. They're saying like, oh, well, in some of the literature, they say, oh, sepsis is induced by the black goo. There was some literature for Covenant that talks about sepsis being induced. And I'm like, okay, does that mean it's bacterial? Does that mean that your immune system could understand it? You know, why isn't it an archaean or a prokaryote, something that's more ancient and weird? And the thing is, like, I've dabbled next to all of that stuff. I'm a total hypocrite here. But I always try and prevent it from going further than the book.
So as you're doing it, you are also considering the implications.
Now, I will say, like, for example, I was really happy to touch off a war at the end of Into Charybdis. I found out that they wanted a war, and I was like, oh, I'll give you a war. And then I found out that the RPG went its own direction with their own war, and then the novels went a different direction with their own war.
But it was all supposed to be tied. That's a whole mess. No.
It was all supposed to be one war.
Don't get me started on the RPG trilogy, the books.
Oh, no. I think that is something that a central story team could have fixed.
Well, I suppose with Disney now taking over, though, my understanding is that doesn't quite exist, at least at the same sort of soft level that you had with 20th Century Fox.
I don't know. I only deal with like one person at Disney who's very nice and I like her a lot. So, you know, that's all I really...
And that's just Nicole, is it?
That's just Nicole, yeah. Who has been a really great ally for the books. But one of the other things I would say is, given that there is a central story, or given that there's no central story team like that, or none that I am aware of, which, you know, maybe I'm just showing my ignorance all through this podcast. It's an entire possibility. But imagine then that you have a central story team and their whole job is to coordinate so that we don't have two galactic wars at the same time. Okay. Do you imagine that they would side with me, the person who has a small novel contract with one of their regular licensors that, you know, generates decent cash, but isn't necessarily their leading medium, or the RPG, which had an unreasonably huge success, major kickstart, you know, has been sort of a breakout hit? I would have gotten trampled all over. And it's nothing to say against the RPG guys, but that is to say, I think I did a pretty good job telling my story, and I probably would have been prevented from doing that in a system that was more systematized.
I think it is also important to know, you know, you've pretty much said this all along anyway. The movies do their own thing. So even when you have a canon as such, the main line of it, the movies, exist outside of it anyway.
Yeah.
So what it almost becomes, what's the point of defining a canon in an expanded universe?
Well, no, because you have different tiers of canon. There's going to be the movie stuff, and then it's everything else. That doesn't prevent good stories being told, but they're putting them there in their own box because it's a marketing thing.
Take it back to the Disney thing, though. They say that different versions of the canon exist as campfire stories, and that all of them are campfire stories, every single one. I think I would be hard-pressed to find a fan who was like, Ripley's not real and the Nostromo never happened.
I've met some. They exist.
Well, we've got the adaptation, haven't we? The original screenplay adaptation. So we've got Robbie out there somewhere instead.
So I guess... Like, right. I guess there's that version out there too somehow. But I think that you can look at the things that have taken root in the general fan consciousness and you can appeal to those. And again, you know, as long as you are hitting those high notes for the people who, okay, when you write a book in a tie-in novel at all the things that we think of as canonical are like table stakes. Okay, so are you going to be impressed if I put a face hugger in the book and somebody gets face hugged and they get chest bursted? Are you going to be impressed or surprised by any of that happening? No.
Standard fare, yeah.
Are you going to be mad when it doesn't happen? Yes.
Yes. No. No.
You're the guy that told me that I didn't have enough people being dragged off on screen as opposed to mutilated in one particular scene of Intercaribbean.
Yes, you are very true. Come on, let's put that into context. That wasn't so much about me being a sadistic bastard. That was more of a stop killing them and save yourself some hosts kind of thing.
Oh, I get it.
This is the canon of Aeron. It's saying these are my rules that I do.
What I'm trying to say, though, is that you had a set of expectations that you were going toward. And by the way, I'm not. Look, if I went back and I had to rewrite that scene now, I would be thinking about how I was going to make you happy. Like, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to make sure Aeron can't say that twice, you know, like, but the thing is that violated your expectations. So people have a set of expectations and you have to work in tandem with them while at the same time recognizing that you don't actually get anything for fulfilling them. Like when I put that face hugger in there, you don't care that it was in there. You only care. There's the part where Blue has to suck a sample out of a face hugger. People remember that shit because that was a different usage of the canonical element. But really, when you look at it, you know, the things that I consider to be canonical are like the attitude of the series. Like for me, I think that Alien shouldn't be silly. I don't think that characters need to be exchanging one-liners all the time. It drives me insane. I think that that violates canon. But like, that's not the sort of thing that people think about or care about when they use that term. And so it,
you know. Yeah.
We have seen some wacky comics in the old Dark Horse days in terms of Alien, though.
Mondo.
Herc Mondo.
I was just about to say, yeah, Herc Mondo.
You know, it was funny. I got to, in Into Charybdis, resolve the canon of Mondo by saying that he is a comic book in that world.
But that's where you can explore those kind of things, right? Is in the comics, and maybe less so the novels. Maybe the novels have more of a cinematic expectation than you would see in the comics, because I guess it's just shorter format, right? So
I don't know. There's a young adult one, Echoes.
I still say there's room for someone to do a comedy or a parody of Alien. Especially if you did like a Weyland Yutani.
We already had that.
Isn't it called Dark Star?
Yeah, but like a Weyland Yutani in the style of The Office. I think it could totally work.
That is a decent idea. You could shoot it yourself.
You know what? I could see that because I absolutely hate Steve Carell's character in that show. Just because of his...
People have done some AI art of him being cocooned and stuff. So.
His ineptitude.
Yes.
As a leader in that show angers me.
I think these days you kind of need to acknowledge how inept Weyland Yutani has been in so much media, because it just has been. You're kind of wondering how on earth did they get to be so powerful by being so inept?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that saves any large organizations like that is bureaucracy. It's momentum and bureaucracy. It's that they can crush more people than can get out of the way. I mean, real world organizations like Weyland Yutani are, you know,
stupid. Yeah.
Really inept. Really powerfully inept.
I don't think people appreciate how realistic the ridiculousness of corporations is. I always come back to an example of communication. So when people are like, why is Burke doing his own thing on his own if the company already knew about the aliens because of the special order? How does this work? They already knew. Why have you got somebody acting independently? And I'm like, yeah, but that kind of miscommunication on a huge corporate level is just standard fare. You know, I personally was involved in a project at a local level. I used to work for a service company that had fingers in every pies over the world. And at a very local level, we were working on a project doing something. And then a different part of the company found out and went, why the fuck are you doing this? We already do this. We have an existing department specifically for this purpose. What are you doing? And I was like, okay, yeah, I completely see how all this bullshit works in literature.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, my favorite example of this is that there's a standard severance clause in American contracts that you see all the time. And that says that it's a waiver of causes. It says that no matter what I find out afterwards, I can't sue you for discrimination. Which is interesting because, you know, it's something you're handed this contract. They say you're out of a job. You don't have any more money coming in. And if you want 2 months of pay, you're going to sign this today. You know, you have 1 week to consider whether or not you want to withdraw that. And that's standard, right? But there's no ethical reason to do that. There's no ethical reason to put that clause in there. You know, it's just protecting a company in case they've done something horribly illegal to you and violated your rights. But because of the leverage that they have over you and your life, they don't even have to be good at their jobs to put that in the contract. So I should mention, this is very fresh on my mind. I'm between jobs right now myself. Because surprise, surprise, a Thaian novelist has a day job. Ah, well.
The real world sucks as much as the fictional world.
Hey, look, if any of your you listeners need a dynamite customer experience product manager, let me know.
That is a surprise to me, given just the amount of books you write. I would have considered that your full-time thing.
Oh, unfortunately not. I think I probably get about maybe about a sixth of my income from writing. It's very difficult. And the other thing to remember is that all the tie-ins, well, all the Alien tie-ins don't even give royalties. So it's a one-time contract fee. That money's long gone. And it's not as much as you might think. And that's unfortunate, but it's just how it's got to work for me, I guess. I don't know. I'm alive right now. This is the industry I have to participate in.
So if you're wondering why you don't see many of your favorite authors returning.
No, absolutely that's true. Absolutely that's true. And I will tell you that as much as I like writing for Alien, the contract fees are probably the biggest reason why I can't do it as much as I want to. If they were going to come in and offer me a blockbuster summer event book, you know, like a Star Wars that comes out, that would change that math. But I don't think that they can.
Adam, I realize we've not really let you talk so far this episode. So do you give a shit about canon or whether a particular story or game or whatever is considered canon and why?
I mean, that's a tough question. One of my favorite quotes about this topic is from you when you said something is canon until it's not. And it seems like we've had those phases in the EU, right? Where you kind of have a somewhat cohesive storytelling phase and then things change and you move to something else. We kind of had that post-Prometheus with the big Dark Horse crossover series. maybe less so with the novels. But in movies, we've seen that too. We've seen a number of franchises such as The Terminator, such as Halloween. I'm sure there's other examples out there where they're just like, okay, things have gotten a little too crazy, a little too convoluted. We're going to start fresh. We're going to say it starts after the sequel now, or we're going to say it starts after the original now. Godzilla has done that a bunch where you have totally different interpretations of this same character, right? Regardless of, people have told me that the story for Neil Blomkamp's Alien 5 was ridiculous if I would have known all the details. But I will always lament that movie not having been made, because after how much Prometheus and Covenant frustrated me, I was like, just throw a wrench in it. Let's just do what we do with the comics and with the novels and be like, okay, the movies have their own different canons now. I mean, we already kind of have that if you subscribe to AVP canon, right? As opposed to Alien canon.
Remember, that's then made a little bit more awkward because of the license factor.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I mean, again, like Predator Concrete Jungle, the aliens showed up in that. Like, it's happened. And we see it all the time in Marvel, where like every single Marvel movie is an Avengers movie now, which is also a little ridiculous. So it's tricky because you get to a point where all these people have contributed to something, and that's important. And you want to maintain some honor with that, and you have to try interesting new things. But there's also going too far, or there's intentionally going too far for the sake of that. And I think comics are a good avenue for that, like, you know, Mondo Paz. But you can do that in the movies too. Star Trek is an example of that for me, where J.J. Abrams is like, I didn't even like Star Trek, and I'm just going to do this completely new continuity now. And I'm like, well, to me, that's kind of dishonoring everyone who spent decades building these stories and building this universe.
But don't you think that's a different example anyway? Because some franchises, such as Star Trek, such as Terminator, have this inbuilt narrative function to allow the existence of alternate...
For time travel, alternate universes. And we almost got that with Alien.
But Alien does not have that inbuilt narrative function.
We almost got that with Predator. They filmed it.
Can you unpack what you mean by dishonoring?
Well, I guess if so many people have worked, and again, I'm just like thinking out loud here. If so many people have worked on building this cohesive universe, like Star Trek, and a big director comes in and says, I don't like any of that. Let's just redo it and make it more like Star Wars. Like, I don't know. Am I wrong for thinking that?
I think a lot of Trekkies wouldn't disagree with you.
My favorite Onion article from that time was Star Trek fans decry new movie as fun, watchable.
See, for me, I'll always have the memory of going out of the theater and kind of liking that movie. And then I overhear someone saying, oh, Star Trek is cool now. And I'm like, I instantly don't like this movie anymore.
Oh, that. First of all, you let somebody else, some random stranger, decide your opinion of a movie. Come on, man.
That's true.
That's fandom.
And the thing is, it made you not like it because, what, a new person?
Okay, I'm being a little facetious. It was a movie like Prometheus where I get out of it, and I was like, that was kind of fun, whatever. And then I think about it, and I was like, okay, a lot of that didn't make sense. And like, so it wasn't just that, but...
Yeah, I mean, I left episode one telling myself the pod race was so cool, and I really liked the lightsaber fight at the end. And just trying to be like, I like this, I like this, I like this. And then the longer I sat with it, the more I was like, I didn't actually. I don't know why I told, how did I tell myself I like this? And I felt the same way leaving Prometheus, which, you know, that seems like a dicey position for me to take as a person who wants more work from these people. But I think that there's nothing wrong with having stories that are radically different in tone, as long as the people going into them recognize that they are going to be different. So when I go see an Abrams Trek on the Kelvin timeline, as they call it, then I know that it's going to be references to modern day Beastie Boys and motorcycle jumps and, you know, people kung fuing the crap out of each other.
And the Enterprise is always going to come out of some vapor of some kind, at least once in the film.
And if we're lucky, it's going to get destroyed. But I know that that's going to be the trappings of that. I think where things start to have like a misalignment, like, for instance, I didn't like Resurrection the first time I saw it, predominantly because I had been steeped in 1, 2, and 3. And those are, I think, very compatible. And then it's like, well, Joss Whedon wanted to make funny Star Wars Alien, and Jean-Pierre Jeunet wanted to make pictures of his friends making goofy faces again. You know, because if you look at any Jeunet movie, it's his friends making goofy faces. And I love his movies. Tell me I'm wrong. But, you know, that was a huge tone shift. And AVP was also a huge tone shift. Oddly, not that huge from 4, if I'm being real. You know, so I think that those huge tone shifts, we have to make room for that. Sometimes they're not going to be that good.
I think you're right. And I think I realize I've kind of contradicted myself, because with Alien, I wanted Alien 5 to happen because things have gotten too convoluted and let's try something new. That's exactly what happened with Star Trek.
Right.
I don't know if maybe it's just because Star Trek had been built up over a longer period of time and there was much more cohesion between the expanded universe and the, at least it felt like it, there was more cohesion between the expanded universe and the core kind of series and films and stuff like that. But you also make a good point with Alien that kind of can restrict creative freedom if things are a bit too cohesive, like Star Wars. I mean, would it really be that great if Alien had this story group to make sure everything fit together perfectly in the expanded universe? Like, then we wouldn't get interesting, different new takes on the material too. So I don't know. I'm a big believer in headcanon too. I'm like, you can make things work in your head. Like, I tried to with Prometheus. I was like, okay, well, Peter Weyland is Charles Bishop Weyland's nephew, and he like took control of the company or something like that. But
trying to reconcile AVP and Prometheus.
Yeah, I tried back in the day, but it doesn't work too well.
Adam's reactions to the prequels is the only part where I feel like we as fans can and should care about what's considered canon. And I think that's an entirely personal thing. What I mean with that is the prequels come along. They introduce a concept that Adam hates, dislikes. Their status as, you know, canon means that that angle, that element could potentially be explored further and mined further.
Right.
So that is the only time I think we really have that it really matters to us, because that means that the next comic to come along, the next book to come along is going to play with something that isn't enjoyed by that particular person. And that, I think, is the only time that something's status is canon, is relevant to us as fans.
I mean, it can absolutely cause you to check out. I am just not that interested in certain takes from other fictional universes. I don't want to know that the Jedi and the Sith used to live on one planet together and then they got crossways with one another and that's how the lightsabers were blah, blah, blah. I don't want to know that. I want to hear that it was like a space guy's tool and they eventually decided that arc welder would make a pretty decent honor weapon for some silly reason. But the thing is, that explanation would have pissed somebody else off. A lot of times, a lot of this stuff wouldn't even be an issue if we weren't obsessed with trying to have the same experience over and over again. And I think that you can see in the reviews the frustration that people have where they're like, I was hoping for something that was this kind of experience and you made it this other kind of experience and I didn't appreciate it. And that's where you see people saying that canon was violated. And when you look at like what I'm supposed to take seriously when I'm starting to incorporate things from all over the place, I just don't even drag anything out of certain areas because there's no point. You know, the fans hate it. I'm fine with whatever they ended up directing for Covenant, but I'm not going to incorporate a storyline about how David bred the XX-121. That's not something that sounds wise to me. It is something that, you know, I will tell you that I was shocked that Ridley Scott could produce something that became shaky canon. I was shocked. Before Prometheus and Covenant, I thought anything that this guy says about this franchise is going to stick and stay stuck. And I think that we're on the borderline of finding out that they're going to retcon everything from Prometheus and Covenant within the next 10 years.
If we're lucky.
I don't know. I mean, I wish, but yeah, because Scott is a world builder, right? So you have that expectation. I still remember getting that Blu-ray anthology set in 2010, and it had like the foreword by Ridley Scott talking about like he's finally going to do these prequels. And I was like, oh my God, like it's happening. But yeah, there's so much expectation because we had all these stories of the space jockeys were this huge mystery that were in the background, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of fans like myself didn't realize we didn't really want that mystery to be solved because it was just so much fun wondering about it. Now, for me, I don't hate Prometheus and Covenant. I kind of love hate them, right? Like I can still watch them. It's not like The Predator where it's like it's hard for me to watch. I can still watch them.
Objective trash.
I can have a good time watching them. They have amazing art design and production design. There's shots in there. Like they're beautifully done movies for sure. I'm not a huge fan of their lore implications, but even that, there's stories like what you've written, Alex, with your book, and even like video games like Fireteam Elite that handle those elements so well that I can kind of get into it. And even after Prometheus, I was like, okay, I've accepted it. Covenant looks cool. I love the Martian. Like, let's do this. Like, this could be really cool. And then I'm just as disappointed, if not more so, with what Covenant does. So yes, it is frustrating for me as a fan, and it is refreshing to sometimes see stories like Alien Isolation, like more recently Aliens Dark Descent, that feel totally divorced from the prequels. Mm-hmm. Because it reminds us of those older kind of stories before that canon was rocked so violently by Ridley. And I often joke with Aaron, I was like, I hope he gets to do his third prequel so it's David in the chair and it pisses you off. Because
you just been spiteful, you little bastard.
You continue to defend Covenant saying, oh, this alien movie I really like until the alien shows up.
Adam going scorched earth. I really hope everything blows up.
Like I said, he just spiteful. He just likes to make me angry. That's all it is.
That's cold.
I disagree with you though, Adam.
Oh yeah?
In terms of, and I always have, the idea that we don't like answers.
Well, sometimes.
The problem is we don't like answers that don't conform to our expectations, or in the case of Prometheus, deviate too far from, I don't want to say existing canon, because I know the old comics weren't necessarily considered canon, but the expectations that those stories had bred within the fandom. I don't think the problem ever is we don't want answers. It's when we get answers that don't conform to our expectations.
And I mean, even you had those expectations, like you wanted a more Giger-esque city.
Yeah.
In Covenant.
Yeah. No, that's fair. But that didn't make me hate that film.
Yeah.
But that's my point. So, you know, when it comes to Prometheus, we considered the space jockeys to be one thing. And then Prometheus rocks up with its...
No, they're big dudes.
In a suit. The progenitors of humanoid life forms in suits that look like that thing before. And that's where it gets different, because they're not these big elephantine, ancient, eldritch, you know, creatures. They're just pre-humans. And that's the problem with the prequels for me, is this narrowing down of things to focus on, not necessarily humans overall, but, you know, we are the engineers according to Prometheus. So everything narrows down to this one species.
It's removal of the Lovecraftian element.
Yeah. And that's my expectations, because that's how the films and the older lore felt. We do have another question from Rob. Do you think the films should be reliant on continuity? And what are your thoughts on the possibility of loose ends in the prequels never being finished? Do they damage the series if left incomplete?
That's like...
No, Scott never gets to do that third prequel. David is not being that engineer.
Make it happen.
In the derelict.
So there's a lot of media in the world right now to watch, and a lot of quality things coming out all over the place. So if somebody's going to produce something, I do not want it to be a movie about canon. This is like when they say comics about comics, meaning that like the whole narrative arc of this X-Men thing was to untangle some canonical BS. If that's the reason you're making something, is to contribute to or manipulate the canon, it's gonna suck and I'm gonna hate it. I don't care where the alien came from. I don't care who the space jockeys are. I care that they're well used in the story. This gets back to like, I don't want to know. I might want to know where the Joker comes from, as long as you don't miss. But if your movie misses every shot that it takes, I don't want to know where the Joker comes from. He was scary before.
See, that's exactly what I was saying about. It's not about the answers. It's not about not wanting answers. It's about...
You better not disappoint. But the thing is, like, let's take, you know, I don't think that Todd Phillips could have fulfilled that order, you know, because we all wonder where the Joker came from. And we all had a different idea of where it might be. And just about any exploration into it was going to disappoint most of us. And in the case of the space jockey and the engineer and stuff like that, you know, oftentimes that gets portrayed as a higher power than the alien, right? Do any of us think that the engineers are afraid of the aliens? Because I don't.
It's fair.
And that takes away from something, because I'm not like, oh, I'm going to hide in a closet and an engineer is going to come find me. That's no engineer is going to drag me off to a nest and impregnate me or anything like that. So by being like, well, there's a bigger fish in the ocean, like you're removing the danger of the alien. And, you know, by saying all species are related, you're removing the, as you say, the Lovecraftian unknowable element of it. Though I will say you can get beaten to death by a gorilla and we're pretty related to them. So, you know, it's not always safe to hang out with other species. But to answer your question, I don't think that you should make a movie to complete the canon or to fix continuity. I think that every single film should be heavily character driven, heavily drama driven. And I think that canon should serve to enable that. And so if you have a canon that doesn't work with that, but you have a better answer, you should be able to say, well, Charles Bishop Whalen didn't exist. I don't know what the whole Antarctica thing was. I'm leaving that out.
Campfire story, apparently.
Right. And people will let you get away with it as long as you're right, because then they, you know, they'll forgive you easily for something that you did well, and they will never forget you doing it wrong.
Okay. Don't make a story to fix another story. But I personally feel that you contributed to fixing things to do with the Black Goo and the prequels.
I mean, guilty as charged, but it worked within the boundaries of my story. You know, I would have just avoided it otherwise.
You didn't go out your way to deal with that.
Correct. I wasn't like, ooh, I can't wait to put some Black Goo in my story. I was like, what is Blue Marsalis trying to isolate? And why can't they isolate it easily? And then it was like, well, maybe this Black Goo goes away really fast and that kind of stuff. Because otherwise, the question is, if it's a larva, why don't you just cut it out? You just cut it out every time. But if it's an infection, for example, that opens up all kinds of horrifying possibilities. Like, for example, what if it's never gone? What if the only reason it's gone is because you're dead and it can't use your body anymore? But if you remove a chestburster, I see no reason why another chestburster shouldn't grow in its place.
And that was always kind of a problem I had with the Black Goo concept, was it felt like it was turning Alien into a disease, like it was turning Alien into Resident Evil. And I love Resident Evil, but it's not how I ever really viewed Alien. Now, I did love how you handled the Black Goo in your story. Like, to me, how I interpret it was like, oh, and you can tell me if my interpretation's wrong here or not, but it was like, oh, this is a programmable agent and Blue is trying to figure out a way to program it. In its neutral state, it's just pretty kind of chaotic, but
right,
it can be kind of harnessed.
Right, because if it were real and capable of reconfiguring DNA at that speed, it would be the most breakthrough thing of all time. And it's very easy to make that story about the Black Goo, and it's very hard to make that story about a larva, because a larva is not reprogrammable. It's not going to save somebody with a terminal illness, but potentially the prokaryote or bacterium or bacteriophage or whatever the Black Goo is, potentially that has massive medical applications, which start to open up those ethical questions about late stage capitalism that the series really cares about, you know, in a way that the larva doesn't. And so there's a moment in Aliens when Bishop theorizes that maybe it implants a larva. And that's the only ever reference to the larva. But if you go back and look at Kane's X-ray, you see particulates moving back and forth. And so I was like, oh, this is not contradicted. Ridley Scott has clearly been thinking about this for a while. I think I'm going to go with it because it empowers my story to be more important. And so it worked for me.
It is an interesting concept. Was that not a fan theory like a long time ago, Aaron?
Yes.
Where it's essentially the facehugger is pretty much giving your body a blueprint to construct its own chestburster. And that is a really interesting idea, I think.
And very reasonable in the animal kingdom. That's the sad part. It's there are plenty of things that work like that. And, you know, they don't usually make creatures with differentiated organs. But the idea that that could exist is really interesting and brings up some implications that are still horrific, still unknowable, still terrifying. Yeah, that one doesn't, the difference between the goo and the larva don't bother me at all. I really feel like the larva was a holdover from Cameron trying to say like, oh, these are ants. I think that Aliens, in the same way that Alien created this whole milieu, I think Aliens irrevocably changed the series to be about ants and really brought in a lot of that imagery that people are more than happy to continuously capitalize on, because it makes a lot of sense.
Eric, you've been silent.
I know.
Yeah, if I speak about that, it's going to upset Alex, and I don't want to have an argument about
No. I'm here to have a nice discussion.
I really did not like that element in Coldwood because that coloured my perception of it going in. After I got through it, I was fine because I was so glad you as an author had used the tool of ambiguity about where the eggs come from. We didn't need to know.
Right.
So me, as someone who favours the embryo implantation, because to me, I go, that was in the Hadley's Hope medical report. And it makes sense. That's why Facehugger needs to stay on there that long.
The Hadley's Hope medical report is that a secondary document?
No, no, it's in the film. Bishop reads from it, yeah. So he's talking about it was removed from before they were able to implant the embryo. But that's why I'm glad you did where did the eggs came from, because me as a fan, I was thinking, oh, so they could have been from David 8, they could have been from some other planet. I wasn't forced as a reader to say these are all V426. And I really was thankful that you did it. But yeah, I disagree about the whole facehugger embryo thing. But talking about canon in general, I think there have been Alexis here, they'll tell you guys that in Star Trek and Star Wars, way before Alien was around, their entire relationships that all fell apart because people were arguing about canon. We have it in Alien a bit more because of Alien 3, the magical teleporting egg. So even if, like me, you regard cinematic canon and then everything else, we have to accept that happened. It's an entry in the film canon. Even the cryo tubes look different. There is no answer for it. But I think if, again, like me, you come from the old school where you had the comics come out and then Alien 3 came out and it was completely different. And yet you had all the expanding media come out. They were always referring to the Earth War, and clearly the films were never going to touch on the Earth War. I've grown so used to saying, no, we had that argument back then. You got the comics, video games. I enjoy them for what they are. I don't have to square the circle of how does this thing work? How does it fit together? How do you get these things together? It's just so relaxing to say, I'm going to enjoy this book. I'm going to enjoy that video game. And I don't have to piece it all together. And when you had that big statue thing came out of the Alien King and they said, yeah, Fox regarded this as canon. How? I don't know. And it didn't make sense. So it felt like Fox, back when Fox owned it, was using it as like a license to print money. We're going to call it canon, like Colonial Marines. They called it canon. And it was just a license to print money rather than saying, okay, how does it fit together? Canon is a cohesive framework of parameters, like precedents. What can be done, what can't be done? Because without it, okay, what happens next? A predator can shoot lasers from its eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, like, there's parameters. Can an alien levitate? No. But could they? But you got to work. That's what makes it feel grounded. That's what makes it different from like a Marvel cartoon or whatever. It's got to feel grounded. You've got to have parameters you work in, because otherwise you could say, well, anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, you had General Perez in Alien Resurrection. He's saying, yeah, the last time anyone was known to have interacted with the alien was events of the third film. And yet you're having things like Alien Fire Team come along and they're saying, oh no, the Colonial Marines are having fights with aliens all the time. But I just say, it's a game. I'm not bothered. I'm going to enjoy it as a game. This is a book that's come along. Fine. I'm going to enjoy it as a book. Trouble we might get into now is the TV series, because that's straddling film and expanded media. We don't know what that's going to do, what that's going to bring in.
That's my next wrench.
Yeah. I think, to me, we have, I think, Andrew Gasker with the ALPG, and he said, everything's canon until it isn't. I take the view of nothing's canon until it is. If a film mentions it, great. What's going to happen with the TV series? We don't know. That's going to be the only, is it or isn't it? But until then, I just enjoy whatever it is for whatever it is. I don't go, everything's canon.
I think nothing is canon until it is my favorite take on the Alien canon.
Excellent.
Because it's so interesting that you say that, because there are, like I said, the directors do seem to come in here swinging a bat every single time. They don't care what they hit. It doesn't matter. They're going to make their vision and it's going to be what you get. And I will say that I do not automatically view something as canon just because they made a film entry. Your film had better be good, unfortunately. And certain things from your film I might take, and other things from your film I'm not really interested in. And whatever the particular agenda is to push that time, you know, I've in previous years heard, oh, you should make Peter Whalen more sympathetic, for example, and make companies cool again. And I'm like, well, I'm definitely not doing that. That's not why I got into writing Alien. You know, there are times when people try and push something artificially. But the thing that's interesting is the Alien fans will accept whether or not something is canon. And I'll tell you right now, I feel like Prometheus and Covenant are on the borderline. I think that there are enough fans that don't accept it that Ridley Scott won't be in charge of this forever.
We see that with Noah Hawley's comments as well recently.
Yeah.
About what, you know, what he's doing with the TV show and that the prequels aren't useful to him, I think was the phrase that he used.
Wow. And he's employed by them right now, getting that paycheck. So that's quite empowered he is.
Well, the thing about when you say canonic, Alex is here, they'll tell you, Alex, I think you touched on this earlier, they're not going to have a new author or director ever brought into a project. You're going to pitch something, right? They're not going to go, okay, great. Here's 30 years worth of stuff on your desk. Now right. you're forced to play through Alien Isolation. You're going to pitch an idea. They're going to go, okay, does it fit in with the films? You're going to get that if you're lucky, I would imagine. And they're not going to say, yeah, this has got to fit in with everything.
I think you're going to spend a lot more time massaging the executive producer's ego than you will fitting canon or, you know, Sir Ridley visits and makes a dictate. And then all of a sudden Disney's up your butt telling you, you got to film this way or that way. I don't know that that's how that works, but I'd be willing to bet there's at least one story of an executive coming in and being like, I really want this and it doesn't matter what you think.
I think canon has become a weaponized term as a marketing tool. You know, you brought it with a piece of shit that is Cloning Marines. That was a marketing tool that they were doing to sell, you know, this experience. We're going to fix Alien 3 with this new canon entry.
You notice how that was ironic. He said, a pitch for said, you're going to appreciate Alien 3 more after this. And ironically, people did, but not in the way he thought we did.
what's the term for when something's so shit that you go and revisit earlier?
Karma.
No, there's an actual phrase for it, and I can't remember it is.
That's really funny, though. The idea that the game messed up its canonical entry so badly that people would be like, I preferred the one where my three favorite characters died.
Yes, because it's always a gamble. I'm going to come in here, I'm going to fix it, and your fix makes things worse or whatever. People are going to say, you might as well have just kept the original.
Don't make stories about canon.
I was going to say, it just goes exactly to what you were saying, that it has to be, is this a good story? Are these good characters? I also find it interesting what you were saying earlier in terms of like, these Bibles are not really that. They are franchise guides. They are how this company wants this franchise presented. They may have a timeline. They may be like, these events take place in this order, but they're not like, at least not with Alien, right? Maybe Star Wars has this, but they're not like, they're more focused on the first two films, right? They're not overly, this has to follow every single little point that everyone's ever written in video games and series and all that. And you're right, at some point, Ridley won't be in control of this franchise. And maybe Alien felt like more, you know, thrashing canon a bit to me than Predator, because with Prey, it was like, okay, the Predator had some wacky ideas, whatever, let's move on. We have Prey. And there's always that hope for me, like the next thing will be good. The year after Aliens Colonial Marines, we get Alien Isolation, one of the best video games of the franchise ever. And same with after the Predator, we get Prey. There's always hope for the next one. But with a name like Ridley Scott, and regardless of how frustrating I find his movies, I deeply respect Ridley Scott. He's one of my favorite filmmakers.
Oh, of course.
With how much he rocked canon, I'm like, are we ever going to return to how Alien was pre-Prometheus and Covenant? But a lot of people love those movies, and I'll never, you know, never wag my finger at anyone for loving those movies. There's a lot to love about those movies.
Oh, same. Finding out that for some other people, that's Alien.
Yeah, that's how they got into it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That was their first time seeing it, that kind of stuff. Like, you can't take that away from people.
Here's a different question, then. Based on the sort of the stuff we've been talking about, you know, Alex, you've alluded, well, you haven't alluded, sorry. You said that to you, there's more to canon than narrative. You know, it's tone, it's feel. So do we differentiate canon and continuity?
Oh, interesting.
Or should we differentiate canon and continuity?
That's a really hard question. Yeah, I don't know if I actually see a huge difference between the two, because again, it all falls under that brand management kind of, because again, the big thing for me is that the canon is largely a corporate concern. And yeah, if you're trying to ensure continuity of tone along with continuity of events, surely that's canon, right? Surely isn't that what we're talking about?
I don't think it's a thing which will ever be answered. That even TV Tropes has, some people say continuity is canon and others don't. It's there is no right answer, maybe.
So before we did, you know, jumped on to talk about this, I posted on the socials, I posted on the forum to say, do you guys care about canon? And if you do, why? And I think what we've boiled down to on the message boards anyway is, so quoting Syl here, quoting Joe, people like shit to make sense and can help separate the wheat from the chaff. Fandom abhors a vacuum. If there's no official canon announced, people will have endless arguments over what is canon because it does matter. The fandoms. So is that... That sounds more to me like caring about the series of events, about what happened.
Yeah, you know, to me, I got off of that a different thing, which was... expectancy violations. You know, when your expectations are violated, then you have a couple of possible reactions, but the big one is usually disgust or anger. So one of the things that canon can do is it can help to shape people's expectations going into any piece. So, you know, you're expecting me to respect that the aliens are not telepathic levitators that can don spacesuits with oxygen masks and have space battles, for example. That doesn't sound canonical to me. It's about those expectations. Now, whether or not fandom gets into arguments about what is canonical and what isn't canonical, if they bought both items, I don't care. Thanks. You know, like if you didn't enjoy something about the book. So, Eric, you didn't like the black goo references in the Cold Forge, that's totally fine. Did you like the Cold Forge?
I'm not like a lot of people champion. I thought it was, it was a good. I didn't go best novel ever, but I thought, I thought it was a decent novel. I loved how you wrote it. And I will say, for ages, I had this problem of, why can't I get into this? Why is it taking me? I realized it's because the first part is you have Dorian, who's like a complete narcopath, and it's from his perspective. Mm-hmm. And I realized that's why I'm not getting into it. It's like his perspective. And once I got past that part, the story came to me. So I thought, I thought it was a decent, people trapped on a spaceship, space station rather than aliens. Yeah,
sure. And you enjoyed it enough that it there are parts of it that are better for you and there are parts of it that are less good for you.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, I think all of us are trying to work the best story that we can. But I do think that the more that we pay attention to how well it fits into the overall narrative, the less we may be paying attention to the things that matter.
Yeah, and I think it's easy as fans sometimes to get too wrapped up in the details without appreciating just the story that's trying to be told.
A lot of people need to rediscover the art of seeing the forest for the trees. Some people get way too hung up on certain details. They're going, okay, what's the story?
Yeah.
What's this then?
Don't you feel like that is, to some extent, I think fandom now, and I think it's born of things like the MCU, born of that comic mentality now becoming the cinematic mentality.
Oh, I hate that too. I think that there's a lot of negative fan interaction that comes from that. People saying, well, why aren't you producing what I want you to produce? Because I'm the customer. And the thing is, I got to tell you, that's not actually true. The fan is not the customer, even if they're the person who pays for the medium. The editor is not the customer, even if they're the person who pays the author. The author is the customer. I am my own customer. I'm the person that cares about whether or not my books are the books that I want to read. And, you know, if that doesn't jive with the fandom, that sucks and I'll eventually lose my job. But at the end of the day, I can only write so many books while I'm on this earth, and spending a whole bunch of them bending over backwards just so a corporation can tell me what's good or what's not seems like a big waste of my time.
Sounds very alien.
Yeah, an artist can't make true passionate art if they're just doing it for others and there's not that personal element they're giving into it, for sure.
Well, and I will tell you that those in power often forget it. You know, they think that you're there because you love the privilege of working on the franchise. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's a privilege to work for a major corporation. How could I have not noticed that? You know, it is a privilege. It's an honor to be given control of Alien even a tiny bit for a little while. But at the same time, it's not such a privilege that I should forsake all of my ethics or morals or whatever narrative message I wanted to create or whatever experience I wanted to do. I think that would be a huge disservice to myself as a creative.
Mm-hmm. I think you also need to keep in mind fandoms in general, people bond over what they hate more than what they love a lot of the time. If you want to troll on a thing, say, I loved Requiem or whatever. You know, there's another thing about Adam. Adam loves Requiem. That's fine. It's a broad church, but there are some, you say you have an opinion and you know what those opinions are and you know people are going to, that people are going to be set off. You get that so much more in fandoms because people, they bond over what they hate rather than, oh, you know what? I appreciate this thing.
No one hates anything more than a fan.
Isn't that a whole other conversation though with hate culture? Rather than necessarily fandoms, but as a thing overall.
What's weird is I feel very kicked out of fandom. I feel like when I was young, I used to think like, oh, I'm a fan because I have all these things that I have encyclopedic knowledge of or that I care about really deeply, and I wear the merch or whatever, you know. And then I discovered that it seems like being a fan is taking it further than that, is making it a way of life and making it the forefront of your identity, which is something that I just can never do because the people who own it are not people that I trust with my identity. And so like, I'm no longer, even though I write for these series, I wouldn't say I'm a fan, not in the way that other people say that they're fans.
I'm feeling very targeted here with everything there, everything behind Adam.
Yeah, well, okay. And I mean, like, this isn't intended to be a critique on any of you because you're not here to promote toxicity. And, you know, you sort of are aware that people disliking things intensely is maybe not the best way to love something.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. There's too many people that ride those coattails out there. I mean, I remember I was just non-alien thing. I was a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And if you weren't like endorsing certain relationships on there, which were outright toxic. I mean, you know, it was, I've seen people on forums that they were getting death threats because of it. Now, I don't think we've come that far in this fandom yet. But sometimes toxicity can reach certain levels where it's more than just unhealthy. But what I like about Alien is that it started off grounded. So even in debates which get quite heated, you can come back around with a kind of a grounded, pragmatic comment, and you can kind of agree to disagree. It won't get to the level that something like Buffy sometimes could, because those were more trivial issues. In Alien, it's more, yeah, it's a broader church than that. And I mean, I remember when we had Prey, there was a big debate about it retconned the comic that sent out the flintlock from Predator 2. And I was sitting there thinking, it's just a gun. Okay, the comic's not a thing now. It's just a flintlock. Why are you getting so... People were saying, I'm going to buy DVDs of this film. I'm going to smash them on. I'm thinking, just, it's film.
Oh, great. Yeah, buy some copies of my books and burn them.
They were calling the flintlock pistol the space jockey of the Predator franchise. I'm like, no, it's not. Like,
sometimes people get too, you know, immersed in it, and they need to realize their films, their stuff, just enjoy them.
I don't feel like that is strictly it's strictly something for fandoms and stuff like that, though. I do think that is culture in general these days, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, you see it with the political side of things, with people basing their whole identities around spectrums like that. But I mean, for me, it's a case of, do I want to waste all this time and energy on something I dislike? It's why I haven't done a review of Colony War. I don't want to expend the energy on something that doesn't give me pleasure. As a fan, you know, I would rather focus on the elements that I like.
I'm sure the author appreciates that too.
Hey, to be fair, he did my favorite short story in Ultimate Prey, and I very much came out and said that.
Well, there you go.
But you've ripped other books to shreds in some reviews. I mean, come on.
Not quite to the extent of Colony War, but I'm personally offended by that novel. That is the only time that's ever happened to me. But we're not talking about that. That's the point. Point is, I'd rather spend my energy loving things, and it's why I'm not a part of a lot of fandoms.
But that's when we come back to the nature of canon. People do have massive arguments about it. Don't let yourself get that far.
They do, and it's why I hate it.
Yeah. But you're a moderator of message boards, so you're going to be exposed to people wanting to get your attention to resolve conflicts.
Yes, yes.
So you're more exposed to it.
Yeah, the idea that somebody could lose their relationship with another human in this brief span of time that we get to share the earth together because they weren't sure where the eggs came from in a book. It's just like, come on, y'all. Please,
it's trivial.
Please, it's a fictional universe. And like, I love it. Okay, look, I dedicated a lot of time to it, but come on.
Are we talked out on canon, do you think?
Talked out.
We never talked out on canon, but...
for the purposes of this recording, are we? I think we are.
The nature.
Alex, do you want to stay for the new feature or are you wanting to pop off? Aware of your time.
I really do need to pop off, I'm afraid, but I really appreciate it. And one of these days, we'll have to share a pint and talk Colony War.
I wouldn't want to wish reading it upon you.
Oh, I need to find out what happens to my characters.
True, and it does feature your character's sister.
I've heard.
Well, before we loop round into making me a hypocrite, Alex, is there places you would like to refer people to, anything you'd like to promote?
August Kitko and the Mechas from Space, the new sequel comes out this December. It's called Ardent Violet and the Infinite Eye, and I'm really excited about it. It takes the first book to a whole new height. So if you like, you know, jazz, rock and roll, robots, giant robots, and, you know, a glam space opera, go for it.
I love your elevator pitches for your series because they're just absolutely wild. What was the elevator pitch for the Salvages trilogy?
Oh, well, I mean, it's, you know, everybody has a spell except for the one main character who's a con artist who teams up with a race car driver to uncover a galactic conspiracy.
See, I'm already sold on both books there. So.
The Salvages, I could not recommend enough. Absolutely fucking love that trilogy.
Especially if you like Formula One.
I fucking hate racing so bad, so much.
What?
I'm not a racing fan, but you know, it's like
I like Formula One.
It's like we said in the past, Alex. You know, you do your tie-in stuff to and it can generate you a following from that. So I went to read your other books because of how much I loved Cold Forge.
I hope that people who read my tie-ins understand that I put the same amount of effort and care and love into them that I put into all of my originals. They just happen to be at half price and half the time.
And I read, I can't remember if it was your first one or your second published one, but
Every Mountain Made Low. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was a good British release that was not as good in the US, but British readership, real good.
Yeah. I visited that last year or the year before. I can't remember how long ago. I came to it after all the Salvages stuff. I very much enjoyed that one.
I love that because that is so that's so like low action, high drama in comparison to the Salvages. Salvages is all explosions and Every Mountain Made Low is all sadness.
Oh yeah. You just destroyed my heart with that book.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been a really interesting conversation and no worries about not liking the Cold Forge that much, Eric. I totally understand. That's the great thing about this, right? And I think the whole point of this discussion is that we all have different opinions about stuff. We all have different reactions to stuff and there's not a right one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Alex, for joining us. Everybody else stay on this. There's more to the podcast though. Just stick with us. Alex, pleasure. Looking forward to having you on another time.
Take care.
Bye. See ya. So I have... finally found somebody crazy enough to help me do something so I don't have to do it myself. So one of the things I've wanted to do for a long time is incorporate an element of game show to what we do, an element of a bit more silly fun to what we do.
Ooh, we're going to do a game show?
Not yet. I'm going to broach something with Still Collating if he enjoys doing these questions for us. But yes, I wanted to test us. I wanted to do some knowledge. I wanted to have a little bit of competition between us. And I've always wanted to do like little quizzes. I couldn't be asked to do the questions myself. And it would also mean I could not compete alongside you both.
That's how much you care about this section.
Hey, look, when I do most of the shit, I can't always be asked to do all of the shit. But yes, I have asked one of our community members, Still Collating, to put some questions together to test us on our wider lore knowledge. I asked him not to do so many name me this person, name me that place kind of questions, mostly because I also can't fucking remember names. But I haven't read these first questions that Stilco Leighton has done for us. So I'm going to be surprised in a second.
Are going to be like, who wants to be a millionaire? And we're just like...
Well, some of them will be multi-choice.
Can I phone a friend?
Not at the minute. We'll see how this future
goes. This is a test run. We haven't worked out all the kinks yet.
And we'll keep track of who does how well. We'll have a scoreboard going up. So, you gentlemen ready for this first question? And
let's do it.
Our Patreon's in the chat. Also, feel free to join in with us. Throw up answers.
There's your phone, a friend, Eric, right there.
No, you're not allowed to ask him. Actually, Eric, everybody move on to the private chat tab on the side, please.
Oh, okay.
So we can't see the Patreon comments until we lock in our answers. Okay, is everybody not cheating?
I'm not cheating. Yeah.
Okay. So first question. I'm raising my eyebrow at this one. Still collating because I feel like this might be a trick. What was the colour of the alien acid blood in the first half of the comic series Aliens Genocide? Was it A, green, B, yellow, C, red, or D, white? This is deep cut artistic potential problems.
Well, how do we answer? Do we have a buzzer?
Okay, or? Let's write our answers down.
Okay, in the chat thing.
No, just write them down separately, and then we'll review them at the end. Do you want the choices again?
Yeah, give them to me one more time.
I've got to get a pen. Oh no,
you've got a fucking computer in front of you. Use Notepad.
That's good point. What am I doing?
Fucking idiots.
Okay, I don't know how I'm going to... How do I show that on the camera?
No, it's fine. You don't need to show it on the camera. I'm just going to trust you not... I'm going to trust you not cheating when we decide.
Okay.
So the question again was, what was the colour of the alien acid blood in the first half of the comic series Aliens Genocide? Was it A, green, B, yellow, C, red, or D, white? I forgot the alphabet there. You're good? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Second question. There's only two questions for this one, because to be fair, I did also very short notice. Still collating and go, we're recording today if you've got any questions yet. Okay, second question is, this one's should be easy. How many officially licensed Alien 40th anniversary shorts were made?
Oh, yeah. Let me just count on my head real quick.
Yep. I'm not even going to count. And this is where I get it completely wrong. Okay. Has everybody got their answers in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, for question one, what did you all get?
Green.
C, red. Red.
I went B, yellow. And the answer is, Eric.
I had a feeling it wouldn't be asked if it wasn't a famous continuity error.
The answer is red. The creatives apologized at the end of the fourth run in their regular Q&A they had at the end of each issue and fixed the color from the third issue onwards to a yellow, orange, green, clear color mixture, or pus colored, as they said.
I have vague memories of seeing red blood, so yeah.
It's been a while since I've read Genocide, and whenever I see the alien blood incorrectly depicted, as in not yellow, it's usually green.
Second question, how many anniversary shorts were there? I went six.
I also went six.
I think eight.
Okay. The answer is six. And still collating to put those little bits on the end of both of these. So there were six shorts. There was Alien Specimen, Alien Ore, Alien Alone, Alien Harvest, Alien Night Shift, and Alien Containment. More than 550 applicants were submitted at the start of the competition. So at the end of that, we're all tied on 1 point each.
Yay!
With Eric getting the first one and Adam and I getting the second one. Yeah.
Cool.
Enjoyed that.
I guess it'll have to go on to the next round, different time then.
No, thank you still collating for that one. Very much expected to be tripped up by that, and expectations were met. So thank you. Adam, anything we need to shout out?
No, we can just do the usual shout outs if we're all good.
Yeah, go for it. Whore us out, my friend.
Alrighty. If you'd like to find us on our main hub of activity, please check out our website, avpgalaxy.net, where we have all sorts of good stuff like the latest news on the franchises, message boards where you can engage with other fans, editorials, reviews, interviews. We are also on all the major social media channels, Facebook, X, Instagram, and Threads. A big thank you to our Patreon supporters. Again, we really appreciate your support, and it's been a really, really good boost for us here. So again, we appreciate that. And if you'd like to support what we do at EVP Galaxy, it's just patreon.com/EVP Galaxy. If you'd like to follow me personally, it's at ridgetop21 on both Instagram and X.
And if you want to follow me personally, please only do it on Instagram. Don't do it in real life. You know, I'm not about that. You can find me on @_CorporalHicks. We're not even going to bother asking Eric. There's no point.
But you can follow me in my real life. My postcode is...
I say that because it's happened. It's a joke, but it has happened.
Right. Okay.
Aaron, do we have any new Patreon members we need to shout out? Because we didn't do it last time.
Okay. We had a couple of recent ones following the publishing of our...
This is our first podcast in April, right?
This is going to be our first episode released in May.
Oh, okay.
We've already got April's in the recorded. You know what? Let's get a list ready for the next one. But at the end of the video version of this will be a list of all our current Patreons. As of recording, our most recent Patreon was Darren. Thank you very much for supporting us there. And in March, we had quite a few new members join us, which was Kachu. There's a lot of CUs. There's a lot of CUs in that name. We also had Steve Spires, Leon Ortega Valdez, Tyler White, Andrew Berger, a different Darren, and Javier Wayman, at least from my quick look down our emails. But thank you to everybody who does support us. It does make my life a fucking hell of a lot easier. And it has been put to use getting these podcasts edited, at least the first passes edited, before I have to come in and do the second. Very much appreciated. And Rob, thank you for joining us in the chat. These episodes, the discussion episodes, are broadcast live and patrons are able to watch them live and interact with us as we record. And has had some fun episodes, hasn't it? I think we had quite a few join us for the Romulus teaser trailer breakdown and discussion. So if you want to come and chime in as we're recording, Patreon's the way to do it. As of recording the episode, I've also just published a new short editorial piece on YouTube and on the website, which is about the Red City, which is a largely unknown concept that was in the very second draft of Alien and very quickly dropped and moved on from. Very little to no information exists about it in the public, and I've put it all together for you in a very nice, if I do say so myself, nicely put together piece that's on YouTube and on the website.
It is. It's very informative.
But I'm glad you enjoyed it. And another fantastic moody piece of artwork by my old mate Declan Loftus, who I go to for pretty much all artwork. So go and give Declan a follow on Twitter as well, and go check out some of the artwork he's done for our pieces in the gallery on the website, including some of the other pieces that Adam's had commissioned from the likes of, I never remember how to pronounce her name, Adam. Azul?
I think it's Azul Gartz. I will double check. But yeah, there's another one from her coming soon, so keep an eye out.
Indeed. Right, and lastly, I know they've gone, but a big thank you to Alex as well. Very much appreciate that perspective on this infuriating discussion.
Yeah, it was great to finally chat with Alex, but on a podcast, because you've done that a few times now, and I haven't been able to make any of them, so...
No, you don't read the books in time.
Well, that wasn't the reason for the other ones. But yeah, I guess the artwork will be out by the time this drops anyway. So yeah, she did our Alien Day artwork. So hope y'all enjoyed that.
Indeed. Well, thank you everybody for listening or watching. This has been Corporal Hicks.
Ridgetop.
Xenomorphing.
Signing off.